Today, where property is falling and rising and why. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, this post covering finance and property news. The AFR unpacks some of the data from CoreLogic to show where home prices have risen and fallen over the past year. And it reinforces the need to go granular and to understand what is really going on down on the ground. They highlighted that wealthy inner city suburbs in Sydney and Melbourne have recorded the biggest residential property price falls over the last 12 months, at the same time as values in some more affordable areas rose. A long period of high interest rates has put significant pressure on prices in wealthier areas, with some investors forced to sell, adding to stock on the market. Even as prospective buyers become more reluctant about taking out a large mortgage, coupled with a fear of buying in at current heady levels. We already know that the gap between average prices and affordability has widened substantially, and it is unlikely things will turn around anytime soon, and rate cuts are far from certain, at least in the short term. As I discussed in an earlier post, overall, CoreLogic reported a fall of 0.1% for December. That's the first time in nearly 2 years that a fall has been recorded, but there were significantly bigger falls in Sydney and Melbourne, thanks to affordability issues and stubbornly high interest rates. The RBA, of course, holds the cash rate at 4.35%, and a prospective cut keeps getting kicked out because inflation remains sticky. So the AFR showed that there were big price falls for houses in Sydney's east, north and inner west. In Rod Point, a small harbour front suburb in the inner west, house prices fell 8.9% to around $3.07 million over the past 12 months. They fell 8.2% to $3.02 million in North Manly and 8% in Waverley, a suburb in the eastern suburbs, to a median value of $3.61 million as at December 31st. Apartments in Huntley's Cove, a harbourfront suburb, led a clutch of northern suburbs for the biggest decline in unit prices, falling 9% to $1.34 million. And there were also falls of around 8% in the price of units at Kirribilli and Caraba Point, both northern harbourside suburbs. And there were also significant falls recorded for apartments in Chatswood, St Leonard and Pennant Hills, suburbs spread across the north. Many of the units in the area had traditionally been held by investors who have actually begun to sell as interest rates rose. For suburbs like Chatswood, there are many new buildings that are sold to overseas buyers, but the Chinese economy is not doing great either, so they're not spending as much as they used to. This has created a situation where over the past few years, so many new builds have been built in St Leonard's and Chatswood and come into the market when the demand just cannot catch up with supply, according to an agent from Ray White. In Melbourne, it was similarly expensive suburbs, including South Yarra, Chelsea and Windsor, that recorded the biggest fall in house prices. The biggest fall in house prices was actually in Flinders, a town on the Mornington Peninsula, where the median value slipped 12% to $2.18 million. Tim Lawless at CoreLogic said there was a clear trend across almost every capital where markets with lower housing prices have been more resilient to falls or growth, and they've outperformed relative to the middle and upper quartile of the market. The top end of the Melbourne housing market was the first to move in a downturn, while more affordable housing markets benefited from some resistance in demand as buyers sought out properties with lower price points amid high interest rates and serviceability challenges, he said. The Mornington Peninsula, where holiday homes are more common, was also a market that seemed to be hit harder by land tax changes. In fact, the Victorian government reduced the threshold for land tax payments on investment properties from the start of last year, a measure that's expected will raise around $4.74 billion in revenue over 4 years. But by contrast, house and unit prices soared in southwestern Sydney, where the median value is now around $1 million. House prices rose 20.6% at Bonnyrigg and 17.9% at nearby Cabramatta over 12 months. And interestingly, these areas include some households who are now being forced to sell because mortgage affordability is, frankly, bust. In Melbourne, houses in Essendon West and Narrowarren rose more than 4%, while units in West Meadows and Sydenham rose more than 5%. And Brisbane houses at Leichhardt, 1 mile, and Brisbane City rose more than 23%. While less expensive properties are doing better than more expensive ones, data from residential property services group Oliver Hume shows that the scale of the challenge that younger Australians are facing to get on the market is increasing. In Sydney, a typical house and land package has risen about 37% to more than $1 million. But the borrowing capacity of a typical young couple has also fallen by about 24% to around $606,000. And over the past 6 years, the cost of an average house and land package in Melbourne's north jumped 39% to $751,000. But the borrowing capacity of a typical dual income household has fallen 24% to around $522,000. In fact, Jonathan Mott, a banking analyst from Barrenjoey, said that there is evidence that credit is now a luxury good restricted to only the wealthiest households. Data provided by Westpac in the bank's full year results tells the story. Back in 2018, just 6 years ago, households earning under $125,000 received 50% of owner-occupied mortgage credit, while households earning over $200,000 received about 23%. But now those numbers look very different. The cohort earning under $125,000 received only 12% of owner-occupied loans, while those households earning over $200,000 received over 60%. More than that, households earning over $500,000, that is the top 1% to 2% of households in Australia, now receive more owner-occupier credit than the bottom 55%. And of course, in recent years, incomes have hardly moved at all. The change over the last 6 years is dramatic. As Mott says, a young household can no longer afford a house and land package unless they previously owned a home and have accumulated housing equity or received money from family members via the bank of mum and dad. This explains the pressure on APRA to reduce the loan buffers on mortgage lending for first-time buyers. But already we see significant pressure on these households with the current settings, so simply providing more credit is not the answer. And in fact, APRA recently warned about pressure on households because of high debt. Actually, all the evidence shows prices merely expand to take account of extra credit availability. In fact, for 20 years or so, I've been arguing that the supply of credit has been driving prices higher. As banks ease lending restrictions from 3 times income to 6 times or more, and the financial sector was more broadly deregulated. So structurally, we absolutely need to see property prices taking a breather for some time to allow incomes to catch up. Plus, dialing back migration and looking again at the tax breaks that property investors get should be on the table. Sure, we do need to build more dwellings, but the current rush for higher density housing is fraught with difficulties from poor quality construction to problems with high density living, thanks to things like traffic congestion and access to services. Thus, as never before, it's important to go granular to understand what's really happening and also avoid simplistic fixes, which are possibly politically popular. Fixing housing affordability will take a generation and will require some degree of price correction. Generally, standalone houses will do better than units in this environment, but again, it's important to study the local area and avoid generalizations. Finally, perhaps it's time to move away from the fixation on rising property prices and regard a home as a place of shelter, not a financial investment. That may not be a popular view, but to me, it has great merit. Though the question is, can the genie be put back in the financialization bottle? Well, not unless politicians change tack. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer.
I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again.
next time.